The thing was flickering more slowly now, spending less time looking like a giant version of Ginger and more looking like the contents of a taxidermist's sink trap. It pulled its dripping bulk over the top of the tower and lay there. Air whistled through its breathing tubes. Under its tentacles, the rock crumbled as the magic drained away and was replaced by the hungry appetite of time. It was bewildered. Where were the others? It was alone and besieged in a strange place. And now it was angry. It extended an eye and glared at the ape struggling in what had been a hand. The thing extended a pseudopod and wrapped it around the librarian's waist, and became aware of another figure, ridiculously small, erupting from the stairwell. Victor unslung the pike from his back. What did you do now? When you were dealing with humans, you had options. You could say, "Hey, put down that ape and come out with your feelers up." You could... A claw-tipped tentacle as thick as his arm slammed down on the stones, cracking them. He leapt backwards and brought the pike around in a backhanded swipe that drew a deep yellow slash in the thing's hide. It howled and shuffled around with unpleasant speed to flail more tentacles at him. Shape, thought Victor. They've got no real shape in this world. It has to spend too much time holding itself together. The more it has to concentrate on me, the less it can concentrate on not falling to bits. An assortment of mismatched eyes extended from various bits of the thing. As they focused on Victor, they crinkled with angry, bloodshot veins. Okay, he thought. I've got its attention. Now what? He stabbed at a snapping claw and jumped with his knees up under his chin when a mercifully unidentifiable pseudopod tried to chop his legs from under him. Another tentacle snaked out. An arrow passed through it with the same effect as a steel pellet shooting through a sock filled with custard. The thing screeched. The broomstick barreled over the top of the tower with the Arch-Chancellor feverishly reloading. Victor heard a distant, "If it bleeds, we can kill it," followed by, "What you mean, we?" Victor pressed forward, hacking at anything that looked vulnerable. The creature changed form, trying to thicken its hide or grow a carapace wherever the pike fell. But it wasn't fast enough. They're right. It can be killed, Victor thought. It may take all day, but it's not invincible. And then there was Ginger in front of him, her expression filled with pain and shock. He hesitated. An arrow thudded into what might have been its body.
"Tally-ho! Take us round again, Bursa!"
The image dissolved. The thing screeched, threw the librarian aside like a doll, and lurched at Victor with all tentacles at full stretch. One of them knocked him over. Three others dragged the pike from his hands, and then the thing was rearing up like a leech, raising the iron pike to knock its tormentors out of the sky. Victor raised himself up on his elbows and concentrated. Just reel for long enough. The lightning bolt outlined the thing in blue and white light. After the thunderclap, the creature swayed drunkenly, with little tendrils of electricity coruscating across it and making whizzing noises. A few limbs were smoking. It was trying to hold itself together against the forces roaring around inside its body. It skewed wildly across the stone, making odd little mewling noises, and then with one good eye glaring balefully at Victor, stepped off into space. Victor pushed himself up on his hands and knees and dragged himself to the edge. Even on the way down, the thing wasn't giving up. It was trying frantic evolutions of feather and hide and membranes in an attempt to find something that would survive the fall. Time slowed. The air took on a purple haze. Death swung his scythe.
"You belong dead," he said.
And then there was a sound like wet laundry hitting a wall, and it turned out the only thing that could survive the fall was a corpse. The crowd moved closer in the pouring rain. Now that all control was gone, the thing was dissolving into its component molecules that were washing into the gutters and down to the river and out into the cold depths of the sea.
"It's deliquescing," said the lecturer in recent runes. "Is it?" said the chair. "I thought that was some kind of shop."
He prodded it with a foot.
"Careful," said the dean. "That is not dead which can eternal lie."
The chair studied it.
"It looks bloody dead to me," he said. "Hang on, there's something moving."
One of the outflung tentacles slumped aside.
"Did it land on someone?" said the dean.
"It did." They pulled out the twitching body of Ponder Stibbons and prodded and patted him in a well-meant way until he opened his eyes.
"What happened?" he said.
"A 50-foot monster fell on you,"
said the Dean simply. Are you, all right?
I only wanted one drink, Ponder muttered. I'd have come straight back, honest.
What are you talking about, lad? Ponder ignored him. He got up, swaying a bit, and staggered off towards the Great Hall, and never, ever went out again.
Funny chap, said the Chair.
They looked back down at the thing which had nearly dissolved.
"'Twas beauty killed the beast,' said the Dean, who liked to say things like that. "'No, it wasn't,' said the Chair. "'It was a splatting into the ground like that.'
The librarian sat up and rubbed his head. The book was thrust in front of his eyes.
"'Read it,' said Victor.
"'Ooh, please.'
The ape opened it at a page of pictograms. He blinked at them for a moment, then his finger went to the bottom right-hand corner of the page and began to trace the signs from right to left. Right to left. That was how you were supposed to read them, Victor thought, which meant that he'd been exactly wrong all the time. Gaffer, the handleman, panned his picture box along the row of wizards and then down to the rapidly dissolving monster. The handle stopped turning. He raised his head and gave everyone a bright smile.
"'If you could just bunch up tighter, gentlemen,' he said.
The wizards obediently shuffled even closer.
"'The light's not very good.'
Sol wrote down, "'Wizards looking at the corpses, take three,' on a piece of card.
"'Shame you didn't get the fall,' he said, the edges of his voice deckled with hysteria. "'Maybe we can stunt it up or something.'
Ginger sat in the shadows by the tower, hugging her knees and trying to stop trembling. Among the shapes the thing had tried just before the end had been her own. She pulled herself upright and, holding on to the rough stonework to steady herself, walked uncertainly away. She wasn't certain what the future held, but Coffee would be involved if she had any say in the matter. As she passed the tower door, there was a clattering of feet, and Victor staggered out, with the librarian swinging along behind him. He opened his mouth to speak and started to gasp for air. The orangutan pushed him aside and grabbed Ginger firmly by the arm. It was a warm, soft grip, but with just a hint that, if he really ever needed to, the librarian could easily turn any arm into a tube of jelly with bits in it.
"Ooh!"
"Look, it's over," said Ginger. "The monster's dead. That's how things end, okay, and now I'm going to get something to drink."
"Ooh!
Ook yourself!"
Victor raised his head.
"It's not over," he said.
"It is for me. I just saw myself turn into a thing, with tentacles. A thing like that has a bit of an effect on a girl, you know."
"It's not important," Victor managed. "We got it wrong. Look, they'll keep on coming now. You've got to come back to Holywood. They'll be coming through there, too."
"Ooh,"
the librarian agreed, jabbing the book with a purple fingernail.
"Well, they can do it without me," said Ginger.
"No, they can't. I mean, they will anyway, but you can stop them." "Oh, stop looking at me like that," he nudged the librarian. "Go on, tell her."
"Ook,"
said the librarian patiently.
"Ook."
"I can't understand him," wailed Ginger.
Victor's brow wrinkled. "You can't?"
"It's all just monkey noises to me."
Victor's eyes swiveled sideways. The librarian stood like a small prehistoric statue for a moment. Then he took Ginger's hand very gently and patted it.
"Ook,"
he said graciously.
"Sorry," said Ginger.
"Listen," said Victor, "I got it wrong. You weren't trying to help them, you were just trying to stop them. I read it the wrong way round. It's not a man behind a gate, it's a man in front of a gate. And a man in front of a gate," he took a deep breath, "is a guard."
"Yes, but we can't get to Holywood, it's miles away."
Victor shrugged. "Go and get the handle man," he said. The land around Ankh Morpork is fertile and largely given over to the cabbage fields that help to give the city its distinctive odour. The grey light of pre-dawn unrolled over the blue-green expanse and around a couple of farmers who were making an early start on the spinach harvest. They looked up, not at a sound, but at a travelling point of silence where sound ought to have been. It was a man and a woman, and something like a size 5 man in a size 12 fur coat, all in a chariot that flickered as it moved. It bowled along the road towards Holywood and was soon out of sight. A minute or two later it was followed by a wheelchair. Its axle glowed red hot. It was full of people screaming at one another. One of them was turning a handle on a box.
It was so overburdened that wizards occasionally fell off and ran along after it, shouting, until they had a chance to jump on again and start screaming. Whoever was attempting to steer was not succeeding, and it weaved back and forth across the road and eventually hurtled off it completely and through the side of a barn. One of the farmers nudged the other.
"Oh, I've seen this on the clicks," he said. "It's always the same. They crash into a barn, and they always comes out the other side covered in squawking check ends."
His companion leaned reflectively on his hoe.
"It'd be a sight worth seeing that," he said.
"Sure would.
'Cause all there is in there, boy, is 20 ton of cabbage."
There was a crash, and the chair erupted from the barn in a shower of chickens and headed madly towards the road. The farmers looked at one another.
"Well, dang me," said one of them.
Holywood was aglow on the horizon. The earth tremors were stronger now. The flickering chariot came out of a stand of trees and paused at the top of the incline that led down to the town. Mist wreathed Holywood. From out of it, spears of light crisscrossed the sky.
"We're too late," said Ginger, hopefully.
"Almost too late," said Victor.
"Ooh,"
said the librarian. His fingernail raced back and forth as he read the ancient pictograms. Right to left, right to left.
"I knew there was something not right," Victor had said. "That sleeping statue, the guard, the old priest sang songs and did ceremonies to keep him awake. They remembered Holywood as best they could."
"But I don't know anything about a guard."
"Yes, you do. Like, deep down inside."
"Walk,"
said the librarian, tapping a page.
"Walk.
He says you're probably descended from the original High Priestess. He thinks everyone in Holywood is descended from... You see, I mean, the first time the things broke through, the entire city was destroyed, and the survivors fled everywhere, you see. But everyone had this way of remembering, even things that happened to their ancestors. I mean, it's like there's this great big pool of memory, and we're linked up to it, and when it all started happening again, we were all called to the place, and you tried to put it right, only it was weak, so it couldn't get through to you unless you were asleep."
He trailed off helplessly.
"Ook?"
said Ginger suspiciously.
"You got all this from Ook?"
"Well, not just one," Victor admitted.
"I've never heard such a lot of..."
Ginger began and stopped. A hand softer than the softest leaves was pushed into hers. She looked around into a face that compared badly to a deflated football.
"Ooh,"
said the librarian. Ginger locked eyes with him for a moment. Then she said,
"But I've never felt the least bit like a high priestess."
"That dream you told me about," said Victor, "sounded pretty high priestessy to me. Very, very...
Ooh.
Sacerdotal,
yeah,"
Victor translated.
"It's just a dream," said Ginger nervously. "I've dreamed it occasionally as far back as I can remember."
Ooh.
"What did he say?"
said Ginger.
"He says that's probably a lot further back than you think."
Ahead of them, Holywood glittered like frost, like a city made of congealed starlight.
"Victor," said Ginger.
"Yes?"
"Where is everybody?"
Victor looked down the road. Where there should have been people, refugees desperately fleeing, was nothing. Just silence and the light.
"Where are they?" she repeated.
He looked at her expression.
"But the tunnel fell down," he said, saying it loudly in the hope that this would make it true. "It was all sealed off." "It wouldn't take trolls long to clear a way through, though," said Ginger.
Victor thought about the cinema. And the first house which had been going on for thousands of years, and all the people he knew sitting there for another 1,000 years, while overhead the stars changed.
"Of course they might just be, well, somewhere else," he lied.
"But they're not," said Ginger. "We both know that."
Victor stared helplessly at the City of Lights.
"Why us?" he said. "Why is this happening to us?"
"Everything has to happen to someone," said Ginger.
Victor shrugged. "And you only get one chance," he said, "right?"
"Just when you need to save the world, there's a world for you to save," said Ginger.
"Yeah," said Victor, "lucky old us."
The two farmers peered in through the barn doors. Stacks of cabbage waited stolidly in the gloom.
"Told you it were cabbage," said one of them. "Knew it weren't chickens. I knows a cabbage when I sees one, and I believes what I sees."
From far above came voices getting closer.
"For God's sake, man, can't you steer? Not with you throwing your weight about, Archchancellor.
Where the hell are we? Can't see a thing in this fog.
I'll just see if I can point it. Don't lean over like that. Don't lean over like that. I said don't lean!"
The farmers dived sideways as the broomstick corkscrewed through the open doorway and disappeared among the ranks of cabbage. There was a distant, brassicad squelch. Eventually a muffled voice said,
"You leaned. Nonsense! A fine mess you've got me into. What is it?"
"Cabbages, Arch-Chancellor."
"Some kind of vegetable?"
"Yes.
Can't stand vegetables. Thins the blood."
There was a pause. Then the farmers heard the other voice say,
"Well, I'm very sorry about that, you bloodthirsty, overbearing tub of lard."
There was another pause. Then,
"Can I sack you, Bursa?"
"No, Arch-Chancellor. I've got tenure."
"In that case, help me out and let's go find a drink."
The farmers crept away.
"Dang me," said the believer in cabbages. "They're wizards. Best not to meddle in the affairs of dang wizards."
"Yeah," said the other farmer.
What does dang mean, exactly?"
It was the time of the silence. Nothing moved in Holywood except the light. It flickered slowly. Holywood light, Victor thought. There was a feeling of dreadful expectation. If a movie set was a dream waiting to be made real, then the town was one step further up the scale, a real place waiting for something new, something that ordinary language couldn't define.
"Huh?"
he said, and stopped.
"Mm-hmm,"
said Ginger.
"Huh? Mm-hmm?"
They stared at one another for a moment. Then Victor grabbed her hand and dragged her into the nearest building, which turned out to be the commissary. The scene inside was indescribable and remained so until Victor found the blackboard that was used for what was laughingly referred to as the menu. He picked up the chalk.
"I'm talking, but I can't hear me," he wrote, and solemnly handed her the chalk. "Me too. Why?"
Victor tossed the chalk up and down thoughtfully and then wrote,
"I think because we never invented sound movies. If we didn't have imps that could paint in colour, maybe there would be just black and white here too."
They stared at the scene around them. There were untouched or half-eaten meals on almost every table. This wasn't particularly unusual at Borgles, but normally they were accompanied by people complaining bitterly. Ginger delicately dipped a finger in the nearest plate.
"Still warm," she mouthed.
"Let's go," said Victor quietly, pointing at the door. She tried to say something complicated, scowled at his blank expression, and wrote, "We should wait for the wizards." Victor stood frozen for a moment, then his lips shaped a phrase that Ginger would not admit to knowing, and he made a dash for the outside. The overloaded chair was already bowling along the street with smoke billowing from its axles. He jumped up and down in front of it, waving his arms. A long, silent conversation went on. There was a lot of chalking on the nearest wall. Finally, Ginger couldn't contain her impatience any longer and hurried over.
"You've got to stay away. If they break through, you will be a meal."
"So will you." This was neater handwriting. It was the Dean's. Victor wrote, "Except, I think I know what's happening. Anyway, you will be needed if it goes wrong." He nodded at the Dean and hurried back to Ginger and the librarian. He gave the ape a worried look. Technically, the librarian was a wizard. At least, when he'd been human, he was a wizard, so presumably he still was. On the other hand, he was also an ape. And a handy man to have around in an emergency. He decided to risk it.
"Come on," he mouthed.
It was easy enough to find the way to the hill. Where there had been a path, there was now a broad trail, poignantly scattered with the debris of hurried passage. A sandal, a discarded picture box, a trailing red feather boa. The door into the hill had been torn off its hinges. A dull glow came from the tunnel. Victor shrugged and marched inside. The debris hadn't been cleared right away, but it had been pushed aside and flattened down to allow the crowd to go through. The ceiling hadn't fallen in. This wasn't because of the debris. It was because of detritus. He was holding it up. Nearly up. He was already down on one knee. Victor and the librarian stacked boulders around the troll until he could let the weight off his shoulders. He groaned, or at least looked as if he'd groaned, and toppled forwards. Ginger helped him up. "What happened?" she mouthed at him.
"Hmm?"
Detritus looked puzzled at the absence of his voice and tried to squint at his mouth. Victor sighed. He had a vision of the Holywood people stampeding blindly along the passage, the trolls scrabbling at the blockage. Since Detritus was the toughest, naturally he'd play a major part. And since the only function he normally used his brain for was to stop the top of his head falling in, equally naturally, he'd be the one left holding up the weight on the hill. Victor imagined him calling out, unheard, as the rest of them hurried by. He wondered whether to write him a cheery message, but in Detritus's case this was almost certainly a waste of time. Anyway, the troll wasn't about to hang around. He loped off along the tunnel with a grim look on his face, concentrating fiercely on some private errand of his own. His trailing knuckles left two furrows in the dust. The passage opened out into the cavern, which was, Victor now realized, a sort of antechamber to the pit itself. Maybe thousands of years ago, supplicants had flocked out here to buy, what, consecrated sausages, maybe? And the holy banged grains? Spectral light filled it now. It was still full of damp and ancient mould wherever Victor looked. Yet wherever he didn't look, at the edges of his vision, he kept getting the feeling that the place was decorated like a palace with red plush draperies and baroque gold decorations. He kept turning his head sharply, trying to trap the ghostly glittering image. He met the librarian's worried frown and chalked on the cave wall, "Realities merging?" The librarian nodded. Victor winced and led his little group of Holywood gorillas, at least two gorillas and one orangutan, up the worn steps into the pit. Victor realized later that it was Detritus who saved them all. They took one look at the swirling images on the obscene screen and dream, reality, believe, await. And Detritus tried to walk through them. Images designed to trap and throw a glamour over any sapient mind bounced off the back of his rocky skull and came right out again. He paid them no attention at all. He had other fish to fry. The trollish phrase is other maddened grizzly bears to stun. Being trampled almost to death by a preoccupied troll is almost the ideal cure for a person confused about what is real and what isn't. Reality is something walking heavily up your spine. Victor hauled himself back onto his feet, pulled the others towards him, pointed to the flickering, bulging oblong at the other end of the hall, and mouthed, "Don't look." They nodded. Ginger gripped his arm tightly as they inched their way down the aisle. All of Holywood was there. They saw faces they knew ranged along the seats, immobile in the shivering light, every expression nailed in place. He felt her nails dig into his skin. There was Rock, and Murray, and Frontkin from the commissary, and Mrs. Cosmopolite, the wardrobe lady. There was Silverfish, and a row of other alchemists. There were the carpenters and the handlemen, and all the stars that never were, all the people who had held horses or cleaned tables or stood in queues and waited for their big chance. Lobsters, thought Victor. There was a great city and lots of people died, and now it's the home of lobsters. The librarian pointed. Detritus had found Ruby in the very front row and was trying to pull her out of her seat. Whichever way he moved her, her eyes swiveled towards the dancing images. When he stood in front of her, she blinked for a moment, scowled, and knocked him aside. Then her expression slid back to vacuity, and she settled into her seat. Victor laid a hand on his shoulder and made what he hoped would be soothing, beckoning motions. Detritus's face was a fresco of misery. The suit of armor was still on the slab behind the screen in front of the tarnished disc. They stared at it hopelessly. Victor tentatively drew his finger through the dust. It left a streak of shiny yellow metal. He looked at Ginger. "What now?" he mouthed. She shrugged. It meant, "How should I know? I was asleep before." The screen above them was bulging very fatly now. How long before the things came through? Victor tried shaking the, well, call it a man, a very tall man, in seamless gold armor. Might as well try to shake awake a mountain. He reached over and tried to free the sword, although it was longer than he was, and even if he could lift it, would be as maneuverable as a barge. It was gripped fast. The librarian was trying to read the book by the light of the screen, feverishly thumbing through the pages. Victor chalked on the side of the slab, "Can't you think of anything at all?" Ginger took the chalk. "No, you woke me up. I don't know how to do it, whatever it is." The fourth exclamation mark only failed to be completed because the chalk snapped. There was a distant ping as part of it hit something. Victor took the other half out of her hand. "Maybe you should have a look at the book," he suggested. The librarian nodded and tried to put the book in her hands. She waved him off for a moment and stood staring into the shadows. She took the book. She looked from the ape to the troll to the man. Then she pulled her arm back and hurled the book away from her. This time it wasn't a ping, it was a definite low and very resonant boom. Something could make a noise in the place with no sound. Victor skidded around the slab. The big disc was a gong. He tapped it. Bits of corrosion fell off, but the metal shivered under the light blow and gave out another tinny rumble under his touch. Below it, now that his eyes were instinctively seeking it out, was a 6-foot metal pole with a padded ball at one end. He grabbed it and heaved it off its supports, or tried to at least. It was rusted solidly in place. The librarian positioned himself at the other end, caught Victor's eye, and this time they hauled on it together. Flakes of rust dug into Victor's hands. It was immovable. The gong hammer and its supports had been turned by time and salt air into one single metallic hole. Then time seemed to slow and became a series of frozen events in the flickering light, like moving pictures sliding through the box. Click. Detritus reached down over Victor's head, grasped the hammer by its middle, and lifted it up, tearing the rusted supports out of the very rock. Click. They threw themselves flat as he gripped it in both hands, flexed his muscles, and took a swing at the gong. Click, 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 click. Caught in a series of tableaux, Detritus appeared to move instantly into, click, different but connected positions as he pivoted on one horny foot, the hammer head, click, making a bright arc in the darkness. Click. The impact knocked the gong so far backwards that the chains broke and it slammed against the wall of the pit. Sound came back quickly and in vast quantities, as though it had been dammed up somewhere and had then suddenly been released to slosh joyfully back into the world and drown every eardrum. Boing, 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 boing. Click.